Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Michael's Mixdown. Michael's Mixdown is a show primarily about the recording arts, so whether you heard it in the studio or in the stadium, you can hear about it here on Michael's Mixdown. Today, I have a group of guys that I've been hanging out with for a while and have been trying to get them on the show, but they're just too damn busy and in demand all the time. The Gabriel Harley Band. Guys, would you go around and introduce yourselves to the audience? Start with Gabe.
I am Gabriel Harley. I play guitar and sing and do most of the songwriting. And once in a great while, I pick up the trumpet and try to play that. But then I remember I haven't played in a while and I get scared and I put the trumpet back down.
Dave Alexander. Been playing guitar with Gabe for a long time here.
Like 30 years, almost just 30 years, 27 years.
Yeah, quite a bit here. And so mostly guitars, but sometimes I'll get a wild changer, throw some mandolin in there, and weather things here, but been playing rhythm lead guitars with Gabe for a few years.
Who's counting?
Yeah.
Eric Wood, drums and percussion.
Kendall Thompson, and I have the unfortunate nickname of Ice Pack.
I play bass. We can call you Dr. Ice Pack, if that helps.
Dr. Ice Pack.
Dr. Ice Pack.
He is a doctor.
Who plays bass, in case you that got covered up.
Oh, that, yeah. I play an instrument, yeah.
Plays bass. And then Ashley Hart, who couldn't make it to the recording tonight, has been touring with us and probably is going to have some stuff on the album too. Could not make it tonight, so I asked her to say a few words and she sent them in, and I'm going to cut that in now.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for letting me be part of this adventure. So what was it like working with the Gabriel Harley Band and the new album, Beat of a Broken Heart? First and foremost, the opportunity to work with amazingly talented musicians who are also incredible human beings and people that I'm very proud to call my friends and to collaborate with. So first and foremost, sign me up for those things. Sign me up for those experiences. That was wonderful. Second, I love hearing original songs, be it songs that were brought to me by other writers or songs that I have a hand in help crafting. And in this case, Gabe Harley's volume of work that he brought to this group was phenomenal. Hearing the songs for the first time, really learning them for live shows, learning them to be able to prepare to get into the studio to add something to them. So I love how songs develop, and I love those magical moments in the studio where you think you have a direction for something, it's going well, but someone throws something in that's extra, and then it spars other ideas. And pretty soon there's an added vocal part. Pretty soon there's an extra chorus, maybe a crazy ripping solo. All of these things that happened in the moment that not only make the song fantastic for the polished product, but makes the memory of recording it something really special. So I loved those little moments along the way. I also love the title track of the album, and I love the concept of it. So I think our heart beats for so many different reasons, and there's a song on there for everyone. So I think sometimes we associate broken heart with being sad and grief and loss, and there's certainly songs that reflect that. But I think when we are in broken places, we can see light and we can see hope and we can see healing. And there's lots of growth that can come from that. So I think on this record, there are not only songs about sadness and loss, but there's songs about first love, past love, new love, hope, healing, fun, just great vibes and great energy. So I think there is something for everyone on this record, and I think that's what's going to make it really enjoyable for the audience. Thanks again, guys. Have a great night.
Okay, guys.
So, Michael, you didn't say what you do in the band.
What do I do in the band?
You're part of the band as well.
I am part of the band, but I'm in podcast host mode, so I forgot that I also do in the band. I do live audio support for the band and help set up, tear down, and try to make the band sound as okay as I can.
And you keep us groaning with puns on the regular.
This is true. I do that too.
Do.
You said do
da da da. That's all I want to say to you.
Right. So this new album has been more or less in the works for a not so new. amount of time. So all good stories kind of, you know, start at the beginning, or sometimes they start before the beginning, or sometimes they start at the end and then they go back to the beginning. But
I've already lost.
You already lost. Have you ever heard of a prequel, a pre-sequel?
Okay.
So
that's,
anyway,
that's the name of the band, by the way, right? Yeah. Prequel.
The pre-sequels?
Pre-sequel.
The prequels. Take us back to, I guess, what started this Beat of a Broken Heart to begin with.
Well, so I was wearing an onion on my belt, which was the fashion at the time.
No, I'm sorry.
Simpsons reference, sorry. The title comes from the name of a blog that I kept when I was recovering from open heart surgery back in 2013. So the title of the album goes back quite a ways, 10 years. That's crazy. Yeah, it's been 10 years already. But I kept, I kept a journal or a blog so that people who like me could keep up with how my recovery was going. I had been diagnosed with an aortic aneurysm and a malformed aortic valve, which basically, when I went and they diagnosed it, the doctor said, well, we're not going to say you're a ticking time bomb, but don't do anything. And that was the extent of their advice. Don't do anything.
Don't do anything. So and I haven't done since.
Yes. So I went through the whole heart surgery thing, and that took, you know, months and months to recover from and all that sort of stuff. And I kept this blog. And then eventually I got back to where I could hold a guitar again and start writing. And I thought, oh, Beat of a Broken Heart, that could be something, you know, aside from just my little internet presence. And so, yeah, I ended up writing this song just sort of off the cuff one day. Sort of an imaginary story about, you know, a breakup and missing the person that you were involved with and all the sort of haunting the old places you used to go.
Right. And we're going to be laying in some tracks from the album too. So occasionally we're going to have a break and then you're going to hear a snippet of this. And then hopefully you like it enough that you go check it out later. So we would all appreciate that.
Close to me, don't wanna talk, don't wanna drink. I just want us like we used to be. Since you're gone, I can't hear the music that used to fill me up inside. The songs in my heart, they turn to static in the night. Just one sound stuck in my mind. That's the sound of the beat of a broken heart. That's the sound of the beat of a broken heart. That's the sound of the beat of a broken heart.
You've been playing guitar with Dave for 26 years.
27 years.
I can't believe it's been that long.
Yeah.
I met Dave when we both had hair. And I went into a bar underage to see Dave play with a band called The Fez.
Yeah.
I remember them.
Yeah.
And which Dave, you should have a podcast just about Dave and his experiences in The Fez and the things he saw and did.
Yeah.
But
legendary.
Yeah. So I met them that night in Broad Ripple. It was, I think it was Club 816 at the time.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. What was it called? It was JC Bistros at first. I don't know if it switched before that.
Yeah, I can't remember what the order was. But again, it was almost 30 years ago. And so, yeah, and we kind of just gelled right off the bat and have played together pretty much ever since. I think you're on every record I've ever done.
Yeah, I think so.
So,
yeah.
Which it might be worth mentioning, how many records have you done before this one?
This will be the fifth full-length record that I've done. Not all of them are out there anymore. There's a couple that are, you know, out of print, as they say, even right. though we don't print many records anymore. But, this will be the fifth one.
Okay. So that's, I think, the oldest connection in the band. Did I know you next before these guys? I think we met in 2016 or 2015.
I think Ken and I knew each other next out of that. Well, and actually, Eric, you were in the studio as a client back in the
That was probably 2013, 2014.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I met you in 2012.
2012, yeah. We met at Tonic Ball, I think.
Tonic Ball, yeah. And then I saw you do an album release party at the old Birdies.
Oh, right, right. That was the last record, Ghost of Better Days.
Yeah.
And Eric came in with Whoa Tiger, and then we did a Christmas song. He wrote and sang on and played on a Christmas song that I produced. And
we did the Mad Scientist Club.
Oh, right, Mad Scientist Club. We both played on that, yeah, with Greg Jones. That's his project.
Ken's struggling with the squeaky chair. It's all right. I have a de-squeaker plug-in probably somewhere. Take that right out.
Or this will be edited.
Yeah. So, and then I guess that kind of leads to how I met Gabe, because how many years did Perfect Mix Studios exist until COVID?
Yeah, pretty much. I basically started it in about 2003.
Yeah.
And it ran all the way up until about 2020.
Right.
When it was just no longer viable to have people in the studio during COVID, especially because the studio was in my house. It was basically the first floor of my house. Right. So
we met because my dad had a weird Facebook chain of friends that somebody'd shared a post, and then that person was like a friend of my dad's, and then my dad saw it because the Facebook algorithm gods decided that that should go into his Facebook feed for some reason. But I believe what was the guy that played guitar sometimes as a studio Musket.
Dave Musket.
Dave Musket.
Yeah, Dave Musket's a really good blues guitar. Oh, an award-winning national and international blues guitar player.
Yes.
Yes. He also runs sound at the Slippery Noodle Inn.
Yes. And so something he was doing with you in the studio, he'd made a post about it, and then some friend of his saw it, shared it, and then some friend of my dad's saw that. And so in some weird roundabout way, my dad shoves a phone in my face one day and said, here's a studio that's in Greenfield, Indiana. You need to go knock on that guy's door tomorrow and see what's going to take to go work at his studio. Because I was fresh out of college, or sort of fresh out of college at the time with my bachelor's in digital audio production. And I said, Dad, things don't really work that way anymore. I don't know this guy. He might open the door with a loaded gun or something. So,
and I did.
And to be fair, you did.
Yeah.
And so,
but it was just because I was chasing that squirrel out of the living room.
Yeah. No, hopefully the birds take care of the squirrels, I thought.
They do now. We didn't have as many birds back then.
Right. Yeah. But anyway, so I got your email or something or other, and eventually got a phone number, and we got on the phone and talked about, I think, our favorite records and kind of what we dig as audio people. And then I started coming over and hanging out during sessions. And somewhere around 2018, I think it was, we started kind of this current iteration of the band.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing sound. And what was the first show that we kind of all were in the room together? It was, I think it was at Patron Saint. One of those.
Yeah, I think you're right. Back in the, I think that was my birthday party that I had where everybody played. Yeah. Yep. We had like 20 different musicians going.
Which first time we played with Eric.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Eric just sat in on a whim. I called him and said, hey, you want to bring some percussion out? And
I was there.
Yeah. So, and that was kind of just the genesis of what we've been doing since then. It's been pretty much the same lineup ever since, except that we've had Ashley singing with us for about a year-ish.
Around a year, I think.
About a year. Yeah. So done quite a few shows with this kind of iteration of the band. And I don't know how long I've been talking to you about, like, you know, you really should be on my podcast because...
Probably since the day you started the podcast.
Yeah, probably since the day I started the podcast about 4 years ago. So, but anyway, we're here now.
In the August heat, she pins her hair up tight. Walks barefoot down to the moonlit bank at night. Slips off her jeans into the cool she slides, while the crickets sing in time and the current washes out the day gone by.
Back in time, 1995, holding hands, sipping cherry wine.
When did this record start recording? Because I think it's kind of interesting that as musicians, sometimes we meander in and out of projects. But this has been a while in the making, aside from the origin story that started it. But
I would say we probably started. When did we go down to the cabin? Because that was really sort of the genesis of it.
Yeah, that was a little over 2 years ago, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was, it might have been before that even, because it was during COVID.
Remember the show in Muncie, Elm Street Brewery?
That's right.
That was 2021.
Okay.
Where we did that.
Yeah, it was July.
That was a fun show because there was a board there that nobody knew how to run. And we nearly just completely pulled it out for something like on a laptop or whatever. But I think somebody who'd had it before us had rerouted a bunch of the signal chains so that like one came out 20 and 20 came out 2 and we couldn't figure anything out, but we factory reset it. And
I remember standing at that board going, I've never seen one do that before.
Yeah. And I've seen one or two in my time.
There were a lot of stories from that gig.
Yeah, one show in particular was hysterical. Yes,
there were a few of them.
There was.
We got to play with the governor. We did.
That was one of the last shows that Governor Davis played, and he sat in with us.
And I sat on the board during that section because there was another guy, Nathan
Williams.
Williams, yes. Yeah. He brought the equipment, and then him and I believe his dad were kind of switching in and out playing things.
This was actually it was a benefit for American Cancer Society, I think, because his dad had had been through chemo and had basically gone into remission from cancer. Unfortunately, the cancer came back and he passed away last year, I believe it was. But his dad had been, I think, one of the co-owners of Mid-America Sound. Mm-hmm. Which they do a lot of the really big festivals and things like that around the region, really.
Well, we did that gig at the end of June, and then the 4th of July weekend is
when we went to
the cabin.
The cabin.
So it was right after that.
Do we want to get more into what else happened that night, or do we want to cut that question out?
The bass player is drawing a line across his throat. 100%. 100%. Let's just say that there was some unintentional medical issues that propped up that would normally be, Dave's about to lose it, would normally not be a big deal, except that, you know, they happened right before the show.
Yeah.
Some issues with...
It was really hot that day.
It was, well, that was the other thing.
The scorching here. I thought you were going to fall over.
That's not actually the medical issue I was referring to.
No, I know which one you were talking about. Yeah, I was deflecting.
Wait a minute. I don't know what we're talking about. What happened before the gig? I don't know what we're talking about.
Okay, so somebody...
my wife.
Okay. All right. Ken's wife.
It is a great story.
It is a great story. Ken's wife and my wife have been friends since grade school. And my wife was having some foot pain. She'd had surgery not too long before and had forgotten to bring ibuprofen with her and asked Ken's wife, do you have any ibuprofen? To which she said,
absolutely.
Absolutely.
Here you go.
And
Corey looked at the pills and said, these don't quite look like.
Yeah. She said, are you sure?
Are you sure these are Advil? And my wife was, absolutely, 100%.
So the words were 100%.
Yeah, yeah.
100%.
Here's two of them.
Two of them.
Turns out that ibuprofen and Ambien look a lot alike.
She was in a great mood.
She was in a fantastic mood.
When she was conscious, she was in a great mood.
I watched her, and about like 10 minutes later, they were talking about going out to eat, and I'm looking at Corey, and she is starting to wobble.
Before we played.
And then she fell, and I thought, whoa.
Yep.
Sums up.
Yes.
I was totally oblivious. I didn't know any
of this. I was, too.
You didn't know this story?
I was, too. I didn't find out till afterwards because I think... You guys said don't tell.
Well, here's what happened. My wife found out. The connection was made, and she called the pharmacist, and the pharmacist kind of said, well, she'll be all right. She's going to be sleepy for a while.
Sleepy.
So I'm setting up sound with Gabe and everybody, and we had this problem with the board that you mentioned. It was a cluster.
And it was like 100 degrees.
And it was about 20 minutes before the show, and I get a call from my wife that says, I'll hope you guys are doing all right. That's good. By the way, I gave Corey Ambien. Goodbye. And also, don't tell Gabe.
Also, don't tell Gabe.
Well, and meanwhile, I was like, my blood sugar was crashing out, and it was like 100 degrees.
Yeah.
And like, I'm getting tunnel vision, setting up for on the stage. Dave's coming over to me like, are you okay? You don't look good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But gutted through it. It was a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. The gig went great.
Yeah. It did.
Yeah. It was a fun show. And then afterwards, we had Uncle Fucker's Pizza.
Uncle Fucker's Pizza, which we still talk about to this day.
I guess, what I remember most from that show.
Yes.
So I guess I should tell the audience, because I don't think I've ever told that story on the podcast. But when I was in college, I had a roommate. We lived in an apartment. It was me and my girlfriend and our other roommate, Charlie.
And this is Muncie, where this gig happened.
Yeah. And we were all going to Ball State, and there's a pizza chain that has at least one pretty prevalent location in Muncie. There might be more, but it's called Cousin Vinny's. And when you order Cousin Vinny's and you get a drink, they send you like a pretty hearty plastic cup, which a lot of college age people had that cup because I'm not going to go out and buy cups. I'll just, every time I get Cousin Vinny's, I get a cup, and they're good enough to last, and they go in the dishwasher and everything. So that had the phone number and everything on it. And I remember Charlie was digging around through the cupboards one day, and I look up, it's like, are you looking for something? And Charlie goes, well, where's that cup that has the pizza place? It's got a phone number on it. It's called Uncle Fuckers or something. And I went, what? And then it took me a second, but I went, do you mean Cousin Vinny's? Cousin Vinny's. Yeah. Uncle Fuckers. What the fuck?
And so fast forward a couple of years.
Yeah. And
there was only one answer to what are we going to eat tonight?
Yeah. It was Uncle Fuckers Pizza. And by the way, I probably still have them in my phone as Uncle Fuckers Pizza because I changed it right then and there. But anyways, and so then we had Uncle Fucker's Pizza, and that was a good gig.
Absolutely.
At the end of the day, after all the problems, it was a good gig.
The best one in the morning pizza I've ever had.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, but that wasn't Salt Flats Harley day, was it? I think that was
the same day I was christened Salt Flats Harley. Yes.
Okay. I couldn't remember if that happened at the castle or if it happened at the Muncie show.
I think it was the Muncie show.
But yeah. It was so hot and you were so dehydrated. You had like crystallized.
Like salt like from my salt. Sweat was like on top of my head, on top of my whole head. And Michael decided that my blues name therefore would be Salt Flats Harley.
Yeah.
Because apparently the top of my head is flat too. So
anyways, if it's not evident already, we've had a little bit of fun over the years together as a group. But so that was a pretty monumental show. And then you guys went to the cabin, which I was not there for. So tell me a little bit about the cabin and kind of you spent a weekend or something. And
Dave, you want to field that one?
Sure. So my parents, our family's gone down to Dale Hollow, Tennessee, which is a reservoir on the Kentucky-Tennessee border. If you picture Nashville and Knoxville, then you kind of draw a triangle up to the top. It's kind of right there.
And then you toss a little Deliverance in there.
Yeah, a little bit here. So, yeah, you get a little bit of mountain music and some other things here. But long story short, great place to hang out. We've gone down there in boat. And my parents always wanted to get a place here. And a few years ago, they found this cabin. It was kind of actually after some financial issues and stuff like that. And they picked up this cabin. An attorney owned it here out in Nashville and decided that I don't want it here and sold it to them. So everything in the house was there. They got all the furniture, everything else here is kind of turnkey. Anyway, long story short, we go there and I think in here, it's all wood on the inside. Mm-hmm. Two stories here, wood floor.
Open floor plan. Stand in the front room and look all the way up to the ceiling, the roof.
Yeah, there's actually a loft here that you could sit there and look down on the front here. And I remember thinking to myself, you know what? This is really a great place here. It's got great acoustics to it. So Corey and Gabe came down for a weekend here. We kind of hung out one time here and we got thinking, hey, may not be a bad place here to go ahead and try to record something. So then we put together, you know, eventually that came after the Muncie gig here. Mm-hmm. All of us came down with our wives here and we showed up here and I brought a digital board here because you have your mm-hmm. mobile thing and we just plugged in and you did a really cool four mic setup for Eric and going for that vibe. And we started putting down tracks here. It was a blast. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of those tracks ended up on the record.
Yeah. So.
We kind of brought some stuff back here. You know, we laid the rhythm tracks, guitars, bass and drums, and then, you know, overdubs and stuff like that we brought back and did up here in Indy.
But yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's kind of a nice vibe because we were all able to play live in the same room together. And,
you know. Night of Good Mirth came from that session.
Yes.
Right?
Yep. That one's definitely... definitely one from there. And I think
Falling Further In.
Yeah. Falling Further In, Broken World mm-hmm. is from that one. The one we just played earlier tonight, Down to the River.
Yep.
That was another one that was on there.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then so after that, that was what, late 2021 or fall, maybe 2021?
July.
It was July. July. 4th. Weekend of July 4th.
Okay. So it was like basically right after that show.
Right.
Then, okay. So, you guys got, it sounded like the meat of the record kind of put together, the bones of it, so to speak. And then how long have you been doing the overdubs at your place?
Off and on for about a year.
Okay.
A year and a half, something like that. It's one of those with the, you know, with the pandemic and all that, it was very start and stop.
I would say there were, that was one major event in the recording. But then the next one came in the fall of 22 when we did the Ball State recordings.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. We took a break from that.
There's at least three or four songs that came out of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, although those tracks aren't actually on the album.
Right. Because of
those songs are on the album, but we re-recorded them. Even if we went from the templates that we'd laid down up at Ball State, we redid the drums and then redid the bass and
so
stuff like that.
If you don't mind me cutting in to explain what the Ball State recording program does is they'll call up, you know, artists. So usually the students have to find artists to work with. And when I was going through that, I went, maybe I know somebody that plays guitar, but I don't know any bands. So you're like, you have to go on a wild goose chase and try to find people that play music. But, then you get them into the studio and it's a world-class recording facility. I mean, it's the David Letterman building, so it's David Letterman money. And they've got everything you can imagine. And usually there's the first round of it, which I think you guys were actually on like the second round of stuff. But the first round, the professor will go in and basically walk everybody through everything, all the plan, all the connections, all the hardware, all the software, and then the professor cuts out and basically is just on call at that point. But then I think what you guys did with Nathan, right, was
who was also at the Muncie gig.
Yep.
That's how we ended up there. Yeah.
And so what that was more of like a senior project where the lone recording engineer does everything basically. But from the band's perspective, they get access to a multi-million dollar facility, but they don't get to take the like recordings home and sell them to people because they were recorded with public funding and everything. So basically what a lot of bands do then is take those really nice high quality recordings, kind of use them as a roadmap to go to another studio maybe. Or maybe they've never recorded anything before and they just get like on a whim, they go and record in a big facility.
Felt like to me that we were doing that exactly as Mike was talking about, but turned out to be kind of an arranging session for us. You know, we were just kind of seeing what would happen. And when it all got done, like there were a couple things that came back and, hey, you know, that sounds kind of good. What can we do with that? And you know, my recollection and weigh in guys, if it's different, but you know, we did the Tennessee session and we had some core good songs. Let's call it the bones of that. Mm-hmm. But then we were looking at what things could we do to add here songs. And I know Gabe, you were spending like, you know, what do you want to look at here? What type of song you want to get that? So that period from, you know, Tennessee to the Ball State here and kind of finishing out was trying to, you know, place songs that we're looking for and or rearrange and do some things here. Right, you know, yeah. And so and that's how they started coming together.
Yeah, and we recorded a lot at Ball State that we didn't end up using at all in, on this record.
Correct.
You know, there are several songs that I'd either done in the past and we just did because we liked them, or a couple of things we tried and they worked fine, but we just didn't end up fitting on this project.
Right.
Too. So
yeah. We also there was several songs that are really old for you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that are on this album for I think the first time, right?
I believe so, yes. Yeah. I came up, I think this record I have mostly, it's most of it is new stuff, but there are a few ones that are deep cuts, as they say.
Yeah.
Trying to get over
here. I had the impression that you didn't really want to use the material that we devoted to the Ball State gig until after we spent the time working on the arrangements and listen to them back, and I mean, I was convinced there were a couple of songs that were awesome from that session, and I think we kind of convinced you to flush them out more.
Yeah, I think there were two, weren't there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Share It All was one, and that was an older tune.
Right.
And then...
Good Day to Fly.
And, that was actually brand new, too. I think I had written it a couple of years ago, but I'd never performed it. I'd never recorded it, anything like that.
And then there was Long Day's End.
Long Day's End.
Mm-hmm.
That you really didn't want to do. And we had so much fun with that, though.
That was kind of composed on the spot. I mean, you had changes, and obviously, but...
Yeah, but then we ended up rearranging that, too.
Yes, we did.
So, yeah, that one was one that I was convinced was just too cheesy to live.
Yes, you did.
Is that the Geritol song?
I would watch you wince when we did this. Like, do we really have to do it?
But in the end, I think it turned out all right.
Yeah,
it's fun. It's definitely sort of O-Nighters territory.
That's right.
To reference.
It's one of my favorites, actually.
That Thing You Do. But everybody but me seems to like it. So
sometimes it's the way it works here.
It's obviously the ones that's going to really be well. You know, the big hit that I'll have to play for the rest of my life wherever I go. But, you know.
It'd only be appropriate.
Right. Yeah. Don't Nirvana yourself with. Smells Like Teen Spirit, but
right.
Yeah.
I talked over you, Eric. What were you saying?
Oh, I think those three songs really fit the fabric of the album well.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't sound like throwaway songs or, you know, something that doesn't match the vibe of the other tunes. I think they fit in perfectly.
Well, I think the playing on them is actually really good too.
Yeah.
I think everybody turned in good performances on that. And you did a lot of percussion overdubs that were cool and I had not thought about doing in the past. So even if it's stuff that I had recorded before or had at least played a bunch, you know, it kind of found new life with a lot of those.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, and to Dave's point, the arranging was on the fly. I mean, we hadn't ever played any of those songs except for, I think Black and White was one that we had played before.
Right, yeah. And that one didn't end up making the cut.
Yeah,
right.
Trying to go in and find my list of songs that are actually on the record.
But I thought it was really neat here that everyone brought their own, you know, deliberate, they thought about it. There was the nice feel of everybody's listening to each other here, but then everybody kind of took it up a notch here and said, you know, what can I do to really add parts? You know, I watched you go through Number Time, Eric, and Ken, and it just it turned out to be really nice here. It fits together nice here, and there's nice space in the songs.
Yeah, it's really good to do an original recording and then just spend time modifying it and making it your own. And what comes out as the final product is usually different and a lot better.
Well, I think it kind of underscores what it's been like to grow together as a band because, you know, we're still listening to each other and trying to figure out how we fit together. And that weekend was kind of a crash course in, you know, we were on the clock. We knew we were working on a project for a student. We wanted to come through for him, but we also wanted to spend our time wisely in that facility that Michael described. Mm-hmm. And we were really locked in to each other. I mean, I remember what it was like in that room. I remember where everybody was sitting and the eye contact and how we were listening to each other. I think it had a lot to do with how we've gelled as a band.
We did not leave 1 inch of space on that hard drive.
That's very true.
We were scrambling.
Although it was about 95% full when we got there. That was one of the issues that slowed us down a little bit.
Well.
Yeah, I remember there seemed to be some technical issues, but I had, to be fair to Nathan or any other student, I had my fair share of technical issues in that. But when you're dealing with, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of gear, like, it's just like you're too nervous to poke at anything that might be not that needs poked, and so it's...
Well, we've destroyed the myth here. I was going for the Beatles Steely Dan, you know, hours and just, you know, filling up the stuff here.
How we would do it if it were up to me.
Well, that's true. That's how we would do it here.
You probably have hard drives that are packed to...
I have a shelf of hard drives at home that are, you know, they're just storage now, old projects.
So. Right. So then I wanted to touch, though, I think before the Ball State thing, did we play at the Castle before that? Because that was just a cool gig, and I just wanted to bring it up.
I don't remember about the Ball State thing. I do remember it was exactly a year from the Muncie gig that we played.
It was exactly a year.
Yeah. And we played at Clayshire Castle in...
I don't remember.
What's the name of the... There's a Bowling Green, Indiana.
Bowling Green. That's right.
Okay. Which is
kind of
like...
Middle of nowhere, Indiana.
Middle of nowhere. Indiana has a castle. It turns out.
And Dave and I just played at another castle a couple of weekends
ago. That's right.
So. Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah.
Maybe you guys are the castle crashers now.
Have fun storming it.
Yeah. But that was a fun show. Also, like, it was probably hotter than it needed to be, and it was way in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
But
weren't they wiring in the electricity for the stage as we pulled up?
Yeah. Yeah. They had to pull the electricity out of like a well pump or something and rewire it so that we can have electricity on the stage.
And then my microphone started just spurting out water. That was really weird.
Yeah. Yeah. So, which probably was pretty refreshing on a day like that.
Yeah. Except for the electrocution part. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, good and bad. You got to take both, Gabe.
True story. I brought a tick home from that gig.
Oh, yeah?
I was going to make the comment here that we all gave blood because the mosquitoes from the woods.
Oh, that's true.
But I did not know you had the tick going.
Yeah.
I didn't either until I showered the next morning.
Oh, geez. Ooh.
Was it like big and blue and yell spoon a lot? Or?
It was in the nether regions.
Oh.
Ooh.
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 I think that's where I got my ice pack.
That's right.
Oh, ice pack. Because, you were rocking some ice that...
I was hurting. In the nether regions.
But also it was hot, so it was probably not a bad right. thing to have.
Yeah, that's... Ice. Ken and I both about died that day, too, from heat stroke.
So our live album is going to be called In the Nether Regions.
Live from the Nether Regions.
Live from the Nether Regions. Ticking along. But then, the most recent show that, at least that I was at, because I work a full-time job where I work at night during the week, so I can't always be there to support the band if they have gigs in the middle of the week. But we did that big show back in May at the
500.
The 500, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was,
That was a party.
That was a party. And we walked away from that gig with way more than we got there with. And
I've played for the house before, but I've never actually played for a stage.
Yeah.
They actually gave us the stage at the end of the night.
Yeah, they did. That was hysterical. But also we had a crowd that not quite like any crowd we'd ever had before, I don't think. So it was basically a house party. In front of somebody's house for the Indy 500. And for people that are maybe from outside Indiana, there's a huge, like, pre-celebration.
Tens of
thousands of people show up and camp out before the big race. And we weren't the only music or live band down there. I saw DJs and other things going on, food trucks, and it just kind of pops up. And people will rent their front yards and stuff out for parking and make a killing. Probably pay their mortgage most of the year.
I used to live not far from there, and that's what we did. We would charge a bunch of people on Friday to park in our yard, and then we would park on the street and leave town and come back on Monday when we didn't have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah. But we set up in front of somebody's house, and they set a stage up for us with like risers that they'd gotten from a high school, maybe.
Yeah, it was a high school.
And then they said, yeah, you guys can just take those too, by the way.
And we don't usually bring a U-Haul to a gig, but we happen to have brought one.
Exactly. And so we had the capability to take the stage with us.
And now it lives in Dave's garage, which I'm sure Brenda is absolutely thrilled about.
She's totally stoked about that.
Yeah, she's probably plotting her debut as a tap dancer as we speak.
Exactly right.
And then if I remember right, a lot of that stage, at least in the location that we were at, it was like, oh, you need to move that particular rock to that corner. And the three bricks that we found were going to prop up this side over here. And hopefully that stick doesn't break. But
yeah, I just remember that there was a coffin that was used as a beer cooler.
Oh, right. Yeah. Across the street.
That's yeah. Right.
The folks have been, the people across the street apparently had worked for the Batesville Casket Company.
Yep.
And they had was it a Budweiser branded or Bud Light branded white casket that they used as a cooler. Mm-hmm. So they filled it with ice and filled it with beer.
Not Bud Light, by the way.
Not Bud. Oh, it was a different. Yeah, I didn't actually make it over there.
It said Bud Light here, but they filled it with Coors Light.
Oh, well. Yeah. We won't tell the
Isn't
Bud
that
people.
The same company?
Yeah.
Pretty much. But that was interesting.
And then we had people walking by because there was, like you said, tens of thousands of people walking around the area, and people would stop by, and sometimes they would do a huge burnout in the street for a while, and sometimes people were more interested in getting people to do burnouts and listening to the music, but it was a very...
These two guys with a blow-up doll in a wagon.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that.
You're on audio, Eric. You're going to have to describe that.
So imagine Bourbon Street during Mardi Gras transported to Indianapolis. Yeah. That's pretty much what it's like.
Yeah, there was all kinds of characters walking around. And there were some people that saw us playing and were like, yeah, that makes sense. There's a band down here. And there were some people that were like, what next? What else can happen? Because they're shocked that there was a band playing.
It was a lot of fun. I was stunned at how well received.
We made a lot of good friends that night and drew some nice sized crowds to us. So and in fact, we played a song, made an appearance at a songwriting festival over the weekend, this last weekend. And one of the people who was at our 500 show, who had actually spent a long time talking to me about the band and stuff, happened to be at that show. And she was like, oh, my God, do you remember me? Like, yeah, I actually do, surprisingly enough.
So I guess we're going to come full circle here with the kind of the band sort of as it is got together for the first time in the Patron Saint, which is a bar / club in downtown Indianapolis.
And they do a lot of they have music, but a lot of it's DJs, a lot of DJs
and stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
it's a bar that used to be called Subterra that got bought out about 5 years ago and is now called the Patron Saint.
Yeah. And it's a really cool
really
vibe.
Wild place.
You know, they've got like a Ouija board painted on the ceiling and lots of red lights. And I always joke that it's it's like a New Orleans vampire bar that got transported to Indianapolis.
Right.
Yeah. There's a huge New Orleans vibe going on.
Definitely.
But you have a familial connection to the place.
Oh, Ken. Yeah. My wife's brother is one of the owners of that place. Yeah.
So we've been there a few times and had a wake there, and so we're gonna go back there. I guess I'll leave it up to Gabe. Do you want to talk about the release party and the date, or is that more of a friends and family?
No, it's open to the public.
Okay, so
it's wide open. It's November 19th. Which is actually a Sunday, but the bar's pretty busy nonetheless most of the time on weekends.
Yep.
And so we're going to do kind of an early show. It is 21 and over, but friends, family, all those folks are welcome in addition to the public. And we'll play approximately, I think doors open at 6, and I think we'll go on about 7. And we're still working out the details for the opener, but we will have at least one or two opener acts, and then we're going to play pretty much the entire new record and maybe some other fun stuff too.
Yeah, we'll see where the evening takes us. But that's the official album release party. So after that date, you will, and if you come to the show, you can probably pick up a CD, but it'll be online and Spotify and wherever, I guess, all the places, right?
Yeah, shortly thereafter. Yeah. It's, you know, it's the, that sort of thing kind of happens by the schedule of Spotify or iTunes, whoever's handling it.
Yeah, but, so you put it on what, DistroKid or whatever you use, and then it just takes a while and they figure it out. And you just submit it and you wait, basically.
Yeah. Usually, I mean, they're pretty good. Some of it shows up within a couple of hours.
Yeah.
On some services, and some like iTunes takes a couple of weeks usually. Right. But
if you want to pick up the album, Gabe, where could they maybe get that if they're not maybe from Central Indiana and they want to order one? Can they?
They can easily go to GabrielHarley.com, and we have a merch page on there that they can visit, and of course you can stream it on all the regular platforms,
right?
And you can also just reach out via the usual social media channels,
right? You've got at least one big gathering of fans and other people that you update pretty frequently on Facebook.
Yeah, we have a Facebook group, which is a private group, but anybody can join it as long as they send a request. I just made it private in order to keep out the spammers and stuff. But
the Russian bots.
But yeah, we have, I think last count we had just a little over 800 people on there. And then we've got several thousand followers beyond that. So
right. So yeah, so if you want to keep in touch and you want to hear the new record and you want to get in touch with Gabe or any of us, because we all kind of hang out on there from time to time, or if you wanted to at one of us or whatever, I'm sure we would see it eventually. Then you can go and join. What's the name of the group, Gabe?
It's the Gabriel Harley Music Group.
Yeah. Online. Okay. So yeah, search that. And I'm sure that Gabe or I would be pretty quick to add you in.
Yeah. I think everybody in the band is, well, except Dave, who hates Facebook and refuses to participate. I think everybody in the band is an admin on that.
Yeah.
So you can reach any of us through there, except Dave, who hates Facebook.
Right. We also all have the power to ban anybody, squash with the band.
Which is what happened to Dave.
That's right. That's why.
Yeah. I banned him.
I hate it after the fact.
But so that the album is forthcoming and has been for a little while now, and we're all glad to see it released.
Hey.
And you guys put a lot of hard work into it. I just push the faders when you guys play live. But
do you want to talk about any of the songs in particular?
Yeah, anybody that wants to pitch in anything specifically, was there a particular track that just was really fun to record, or anything that...
I'll throw something in here.
Yeah.
I think one of my favorite tracks is Night of Good Mirth.
So gather around, friends and strangers alike. Arm in arm, stand and sing to the night. Raise up your glass and together rejoice. Let the wine work its spell and set free your voice. And here's to a night of good mirth. Friends in your life who give it its worth. Too soon we'll all be leaving this earth. So here's to your health. And here's to our wealth. And here's to a night of good mirth. The friends in your life who give it its worth.
And that was one that just really appealed to me. And watching that come together, it's pretty amazing. Watching different parts get added in and different. Eric threw in a completely different, wonderful little beat into that. And a lot of fun recording that. I think I had the most fun recording that song.
That's one that it's kind of our version of an Irish drinking tune.
Yep.
It was inspired by by late nights out with friends in grad school, and my wife and her friends in particular, but you know, I participated in a couple of those too. But
right. There's also a song that was sort of co-written by a bird.
Yeah.
Kind of like.
You should bring that up. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so I have a Quaker parrot. If you don't know what a Quaker parrot is, just imagine like your regular everyday parakeet, but about three times bigger. And his name is Oscar. And Oscar, I think at this point, he's like 18, 19. But a couple of years ago, I was sitting by his cage playing this little guitar riff that I'd messed around with for 10 years and had no idea what to do with. And I'm playing this kind of da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And in rhythm and in pitch in key with the guitar part, I hear from the cage, la, la, la. And I'm like, what? La, la, la. And the bird actually, he does understand the concept of singing. That's what he'll do that when we've got the radio playing or something. He likes one of the songs, he'll la, la, la along with it. But I thought, la, 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 in the way he sang it, I was like, that could be something. And so, yeah, I just started with the words la, la, la and sort of built a story song around that. It's kind of a tale of an errant musician encountering the devil and a sort of a sage character and talking about, you know, life on the road and that sort of stuff. But yeah, as far as I know, it's the only song that has been co-written by a parrot.
Sing la 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 at the dawning of the day. I sing la 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 as the sun fades away. I sing la 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 as I'm walking to my tomb. I sing la 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 as I saddle up the moon. La 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 la. Standing on the stage. Crossbones in, I watched the devil play his fifth hand of gin, and he took every hand from every desperate man, but a wise old sage who won one time walked away. Then later on, with the last ones at the bar, the devil.
So, do you mean to say that you're some kind of nerd to write a song like that?
I'm some kind of nerd?
Yeah. You said it was kind of a fantasy. There's characters and...
Oh.
Yeah.
What
are you, some kind of nerd?
Yes.
Basically what I was getting at.
I'm the nerdiest of the nerds.
Yeah, Gabe and I and Ken are chief among nerds, I think, here. But we welcome all kinds of nerds.
I wear that badge proudly.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Ken is a master dungeon master, among other things.
Master Dungeon Master, which is also, oddly enough, it's his rapper name.
Dave, where did you get the idea for that delay part in the beginning? That makes the song. It's amazing.
You know, I really like what... Yeah, Gabe's a very rhythmic guitar player. And so...
He means busy.
No, I know. I really enjoy the way you play rhythm guitar. I've always enjoyed that. I enjoyed about we play with that, but... my personal preference is I tend to like to play guitar parts that are more texture oriented and try to give space here. And I liked how you were driving the song with the part, but I wanted to add to that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I do like to play around with a little bit of effects here. So I said, well, you know, what if I just kind of see if I can come up with a delay part and play around with that here so that it locked in with what you were doing and kind of drove the song, use that as a texture. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, I'm listening to the lyrics of it here and I'm trying to use those parts to kind of bring out or in almost like an old, you know, if you go listen, you go watch Nosferatu or something like that. Mm-hmm. I was thinking more of that kind of thing here. Hey, let's add a part here that kind of sets off what's being said in the song here. So I kind of timed out the delay and because you had it all recorded here, I said, okay, what tempo is it at? And I set the delays to match up the tempo, right. And then I wrote the part. And that turned out pretty good. And then it was kind of funny here because think the original, you already had like a programmed drum track.
Yeah, yeah. I had demoed all the tunes in my home studio.
Right. And so I put it to that here. And then Eric came in here and really brought a lot of that to life here and really wrote some neat percussion parts. And Ken came in here and just kind of, I think that's a really nice song. That's probably one of my favorite songs on the album, actually, personally.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also a song that the vast majority of it is just two chords back and forth. A minor to G. And that was kind of something I set as a challenge for myself. Like, I wonder if I could write basically a two chord song.
Yeah.
You know, and
Oscar wrote a two chord song.
Yeah. Yes. Oscar. Yeah. I'm sorry. Oscar asked me if I could write a two chord song.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, yeah.
But for me, that's such a challenge because we did most of the album without a click.
Right. Yeah.
And that is a click, you know, him setting a delay to a certain tempo. And that was the hardest for me to keep locked in. But the night we did that here and recorded it, I think we only did like two takes.
Yeah, it was amazing.
And it was, to me, it was pretty rock solid.
It definitely felt good.
And it really felt good locking in with you, Eric.
Oh, it was
it just fun worked out so wonderfully.
Gabe, is San Francisco on the upcoming album or is that an older tune?
That's on the last record, which goes to Better Days. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that one has an interesting story. I just couldn't remember if it was on the set list for the new album or not, but
it's not on the album. We'll probably play it at the album release party though.
Right.
It's a pretty, people tend to like that one.
Right. Well, do you want to go ahead and just throw it in there just for,
sure.
for fun? Because yeah. it's a fun story.
Well, a plane touched down on a smoggy
it's basically just a love letter that I wrote. I lived in San Francisco, we're in the Bay Area for a while and worked out of Fantasy Studios in Berkeley out there. And, you know, San Francisco is one of those places that's known for, shall we say, colorful characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of basically wrote a love letter to San Francisco that has all of these characters that pop in and out and that they're all real people. You know, belly dancing doctors and Buddhist monks on acid. And there's a lot of sort of inside references to the city itself. Everything from talking about, you know, City Lights bookstore to, you know, places like the Mission District and things like that.
But, the Tenderloin.
Tenderloin.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's actually a speakeasy in the Tenderloin, which is a line in the song that you can go to. So,
yeah.
It's one of my favorite cities, for sure. Yeah,
actually, you know, I've been playing with Gabe for a long time, and it's I enjoy the fact that Gabe writes stories. I mean, a lot of the songs, I mean, you write structures, you try to write hooks like that, but I like the stories, and there's good stories on this album. There's lots of great stories on the other albums here,
right?
And probably the most enjoyable part is listening to the stories, and you know, all. This is before you guys joined here, but when Gabe was talking about going to San Francisco, I remember when you left town.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to a party at a bar down in Indianapolis. I think it was the Elbow Room.
Yeah, it was upstairs of the Elbow Room.
Upstairs of the Elbow Room, right? So that was your going away party
downtown.
Here. And I remember, you know, thinking he's heading off to San Francisco. And probably, you know, we're friends, close friends, and I knew I was going to miss him and keep contact him here, but it was really a bummer to me that I wasn't going to get to play with him and play and listen to the stories. And so when you came back here, not necessarily what you wanted to do, because I know you loved it out there here, but you came back here and then this kind of all recoalesced here. It was a real thing to me. It's been a real joy of my life here for a long time here.
Absolutely.
And one of the things I most enjoy about working with these guys here is that you two are, you know, joining the band here and you have a commitment to those stories as well. You get that piece of it. So
Right.
It's been a real pleasure.
Right. And then, yeah, I mean, just to reinforce what Dave said, yeah, there's a lot of good storytelling in your songs, and because nerds tell the best stories. But but
you're standing in a 10x10 room. There's a torch on the wall. Sorry.
Yeah.
What do you do?
What do you do? But there's, I think that's the songs that tend to stick with us the most are the ones that hook us with a good story. And if you can write a great hook over top of that, that makes it even better. But I think that a lot of people remember the stories from songs, and unless all they want to do is dance and talk about turn the music up and that kind of music. But it isn't really our bag, but there's people out there that enjoy that. But you won't get that at a Gabriel Harley show necessarily.
I am working on my DJ set to kind of go in the middle of what we do. So far all I have though is a bunch of like 45s of Barbie's music.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on with that.
Right. Well, you'll figure it out.
Ghost of Better Days is the best storytelling.
Yeah, it's an awesome story.
One of the best songs I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks, guys.
That really hooked me.
It is awesome.
The band.
And you may see her in the window, no more solid than a shadow, staring through the broken pane. In a velvet dress and diamonds, pacing back and forth in silence, with a glass of dry champagne. She's the ghost of better days.
That was partially mine. I mean, I wrote a good chunk of it, co-wrote that with Matt Nolan, who's, this is actually the first record I've done that doesn't have Matt on it.
Yeah.
Matt's a great keyboardist, guitar player. He lives in Nashville. He's a full-time songwriter and, played with John Fogerty, toured with him for several years and lots of other people too. But yeah, I can't take full credit for that one because, he and I crafted that one. And there are some songs, I would say this with connection with this, with that song, is there are some songs like on this record, I've got Good Day to Fly, which I basically wrote in like 20 minutes. It just kind of all came out. But then Ghost of Better Days, like Matt and I wrote the three verses of the song in an afternoon. And then it took us 3 years to come up with the bridge to figure out how to tie it all together. So it's just funny the different paths that these songs take and the different ways you can finally, hopefully, get to the core of what they are and what they mean.
Yeah.
Well, those two songs, San Francisco and Ghost of Better Days, it are what really hooked me in, because the gig in Muncie from you to me was an invitation to come and, you know, play with the band, and you were thinking about putting together, you know, the stable of musicians, to, you know, kind of, continue to, you know, play out and maybe record. And so I listened to those songs and I'm like, God, I want to be in this project. And so I really tried to think of that gig as an audition for me. And afterward you said, yeah, we're going to do this recording thing at the cabin. And I thought, okay, I made it. I'm in. And so we've been playing together ever since then.
Yeah. And that's funny you say that, because in my mind it was like, oh yeah, Eric, let's just use him. I was like, you got the gig already, but
no audition needed.
Yeah. I didn't consider that an audition at all.
I didn't either.
I thought you were in.
So I was really impressed when he showed up with a stack of note cards that had the structure of every song and the tempos and all that on there. He's got a briefcase full of blues, or briefcase full of tunes. Got
to be prepared.
Yeah. That's because there are a lot of songs in your list.
Yes, there are.
There are a lot of songs.
They're interesting. They've got really great structure, and you know, they're not boring throwaway tunes in any way, shape, or form. The storytelling is great. The structure of the music is great.
I think, well, and you and I, you were just listening to an album that kind of defined my musical tastes as well today. We were talking on the way here. I picked up Eric on the way to rehearsal. And, you know, I think a big part of that sort of storytelling and the, you know, sort of playing with structure and stuff, we're both huge Sting fans. And especially the album 10 Summoner's Tales, which is 30 years old this year. You know, I think that I look at that album in particular, but albums like that as sort of the apex of what I would like to do. I don't know if I'll ever have the sort of musical chops to pull off, you know, stuff like that, but it's, it's something to aspire to. And it, you know, I recently watched an interview, I think it was Rick Beato's YouTube channel, where he interviewed Sting and his guitarist Dominic Miller. And, you know, one of the things they talked about was surprise, and that, you know, you have to have surprise in a song. Otherwise it is kind of, you can just be a throwaway tune or whatever. And so even, and it doesn't have to be a huge, like, oh my gosh, where did that come from? But just little ear candy and hooks and instrumental things that could kind of contribute to making it a unique piece, as opposed to just a formulaic exercise.
Right. And by the way, don't forget to pay Eric the $20 that you promised him to say those things. So
he's only 20. I got, I was like, told 10. It was 15. What the hell?
Well, guys, I think we've kind of covered the gambit, and unless there's anything else that anybody was dying to say and they hadn't had a chance to say it yet.
Yeah, I got to say, it's been fun working with you, Michael.
Oh,
as
yeah,
our
absolutely.
Sound person, and just what you add and your stupid puns that I absolutely hate. All those things have been like definitely a bonus to this band.
Yeah, he really brings a lot of style to the group. I mean, the shirt tonight says the cream of the crop.
Right.
And it's got Macho Man Randy Savage on it.
I didn't notice your Woe Tiger shirt.
Oh, yeah. About that.
I will say, you know, one of the songs we cover that I've covered for years, Dave and I both, is Werewolves of London. And one day Michael turned up at my house with a shirt advertising Lee Ho Fook's Chinese food. That's become one of my go-to t-shirts, definitely. Yep. So,
and I'll always thank you for introducing me to Uncle Fucker's Pizza.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that was a lifesaver that night, I think.
Are they looking for, like, do you think they would get an endorsement deal from Uncle Fucker's?
Yeah.
Except they wouldn't know who the hell we're talking about.
Right. It's a shell company. Well, guys, thanks really for sitting down and doing the show. I know it's getting late for you guys. It's prime time for me.
Not me.
Well, yeah, not you. You're
thought we were staying up the rest of the night.
You're a vampire. I forgot. But anyways, I sincerely, from the bottom of my heart, thanks for hanging out and doing the show and talking about the album.
Thanks
for
having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Playing great gigs and putting up with my dumbassery, and
we all have dumbassery. It's just a matter of I think what makes this group work is we're all okay with each other's dumbassery.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right. And I will apologize in advance for puns for our next show, but it's a curse. They just happen. I don't know if I've got a hidden invisible ring or something that I can.
It's a gift.
I don't know. I have
or a curse.
I have immunity to the puns now. Oh, so
that's good. Did you pick up that feed at whatever level you're on? Yeah. There's some Dungeons and Dragons in there. All right, guys. Thanks for hanging out. And if you listener enjoyed the tunes, then please go check out Beat of a Broken Heart. Look up Gabriel Harley on Spotify or iTunes or wherever you get your music from, and go join the Facebook page and hang out with us. And if you're in the central Indiana area or kind of the surrounding states a little bit, then you might even be able to see us at a show one of these days.
Yeah, we've been playing a lot in Ohio and Kentucky.
Yeah.
Doing a lot of shows in Louisville and Cincinnati areas too.
So. We're a regional act, baby. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
But I lose myself when I look into your eyes. Well, I never wanted to learn to fly again. Standing out here in this freezing wind. Well, I never wanted to be this high again. But I keep falling far.
let the show begin. Confess my love like it's just another.